Life changes fast. Life changes in the instant. One moment, you're sitting down to dinner with your husband of nearly 40 years, and the next, he's slumped over in his chair, gone forever. This is what happened to Joan Didion on December 30, 2003, when her husband, John Gregory Dunn, died suddenly of a massive coronary event. The shock was compounded by the fact that their only daughter, Quintana, lay unconscious in a nearby hospital, suffering from pneumonia and septic shock. In the span of moments, Didion's world collapsed, thrusting her into what she would later call her year of magical thinking, a period marked by grief so profound it altered her perception of reality itself. What follows is not just a journey through loss, but an exploration of how the mind attempts to make sense of the senseless, to find order in chaos, to keep breathing when the very ground beneath you has disappeared. After John's death, Didion's rational mind operated alongside magical thinking, believing that certain actions might bring him back. She kept his shoes, thinking he'd need them upon return. She avoided specific New York streets where memories lurked. His clothes remained in the closet, his notes on the desk, his voice on the answering machine. These weren't metaphorical, but literal beliefs that seized her logical mind. This magical thinking represents not a failure of reason, but a survival mechanism, the mind's attempt to undo the irreversible. In the aftermath, Didion frequently encountered what she calls the vortex, overwhelming waves of memory triggered by ordinary stimuli. A street corner, menu, or quality of light could instantly transport her to their shared past. These weren't gentle remembrances, but forceful intrusions that left her breathless. The landscapes of New York, California, and other familiar places became minefields of memory. She carefully planned routes to avoid locations heavy with associations. Even in safe spaces, a commercial or casual comment could pull her into memory's undertow. This reveals grief's particular cruelty, how it transforms not just your present, but your past, turning once joyful places into sources of pain. While still reeling from John's death, Didion faced another devastating blow. Quintana, who had been recovering from her initial hospitalization, collapsed with a massive hematoma during a trip to Los Angeles. She was rushed into emergency surgery, beginning another harrowing medical journey. The juxtaposition of these two crises created an almost unbearable situation. Didion found herself having to repeatedly explain to a recovering Quintana that her father had died, information that Quintana, due to her medical condition, couldn't retain. Each time was like delivering the news for the first time, watching her daughter's grief begin anew. Throughout Quintana's treatment, Didion maintained a veneer of composure and rationality, asking detailed questions and taking notes. Yet underneath ran a current of magical thinking, a belief that if she just understood enough, asked the right questions, maintained enough vigilance, she could somehow ensure Quintana's recovery. Even in the depths of mourning, she had to make medical decisions, arrange transfers, maintain communication with doctors. Life demands functionality even when you feel least capable of providing it. John's death fundamentally altered Didion's sense of self. Their marriage had been a collaborative identity, built on shared editing, references, and private language. Without him as her first reader and trusted critic, she questioned not just her future, but her very identity. Her legendary precision with language began to falter. She made errors, forgot appointments, and struggled with once routine tasks. Though she learned this cognitive fog was common in grief, it terrified her. The question, "Would I ever be right again?" haunted her, not just in terms of accuracy, but wholeness. Grief had stripped away both her husband and her self-trust. John's death forced Didion to confront not just his mortality, but her own. Throughout their marriage, they had shared a certain approach to life, a belief in their ability to manage circumstances, to maintain control through knowledge and preparation. His sudden death shattered this illusion of control, revealing the fundamental precariousness of existence. She begins to re-examine their shared past through this new lens, recalling conversations where John seemed to be contemplating his own mortality, references to heart trouble that she had minimized or dismissed. The autopsy report, when it finally arrives merely a year after John's death, confirms that his coronary arteries were severely compromised. The left anterior descending artery, nicknamed the Widowmaker, was almost completely occluded. This medical reality contradicts the magical thinking that had sustained her. No action or decision could have prevented what happened. As the first anniversary approaches, Didion finds herself obsessively reconstructing the timeline of John's final days. Conversations, meals, small interactions that had seemed unremarkable at the time, but now feel laden with significance. This accounting of final moments becomes almost unbearable in its specificity. As the year concludes, Didion begins to accept the need to move forward. The magical thinking gradually yields to a different kind of reckoning, not how to recover the old life, but how to build a new one that embraces loss. This transition isn't linear. Even as she intellectually accepts John's death, emotional acceptance remains elusive. She continues preserving traces of his presence through his voice messages, notes, and unfinished writing. California's shifting landscapes become a metaphor for grief itself, a force that transforms life's terrain and demands adaptation. The book ends not with resolution, but recognition. On December 31, 2004, a year and a day after John's death, Didion hosts a small gathering, maintaining their tradition. This act embodies both continuity and change. What remains is not closure, but a transformed relationship to loss, integrated into a new reality that must be lived. Didion's account resonates by capturing universal aspects of grieving that transcend cultures. Her documentation of magical thinking, found in psychological literature worldwide, validates what many mourners experience but hesitate to voice. The cognitive effects she describes, memory lapses, confusion, disorientation, are common yet unexpected features of grief. Her vortex effect perfectly captures how grief ambushes through random triggers, unlike depression's more constant presence. Most significantly, Didion reveals how losing someone central to our lives means losing the version of ourselves that existed in relation to them, making grief as much a crisis of identity as a response to absence. Her power lies in bearing witness without sanitizing the experience. She doesn't offer neat solutions or promise healing, but instead documents grief's messy, contradictory nature as an experience to be endured rather than solved.